everybody. I'm Dave Sandell.
And I'm Caleb Gardner.
And you are listening to the Best Album For podcast, a podcast where we talk about the best album for driving by a group of youths. Caleb, I have always wanted to be cool. Like, that has been a lifelong pursuit and dream, and I have never once been cool.
Well, you're in luck, because I've actually been cool my entire life. And if there are any tips that I can provide, I'm your friend. I'm here for you.
Yeah, tell me how do you be cool? How does one actually
if you have
achieve
to ask,
being
the
cool?
First rule is, if you have to ask.
Were you cool in high school? In
no.
High school?
No, of course not.
Oh, okay.
No, I would say that I was in between. That's how I would describe myself.
So you weren't outcasts, but you weren't popular.
Exactly, yes. I wasn't like a full outcast. I wasn't full popular. I had friends in all of those categories, but kind of floated above all of them, just waiting to get out of my hometown and trying to survive.
So you're just, even in the moment, you're like, you're not my friends for life. What use do I have for you? Is that?
100%, yes. I wouldn't God say that Lord. That was a healthy perspective.
How many of those people are on Facebook and listening to this podcast?
Yeah, right. Seriously. I had friends, don't get me wrong, but I had my sights set on beyond Oklahoma from a very young age. And I was very realistic about I'm just gonna have my head down and get through this terrible high school experience. I was not an enjoyer of high school. I don't know if you were, but I was not I did not consider those my golden years.
I would say that I did not enjoy high school while it was happening, but as I like look back on it, there were some things about high school that were really good and that I deeply cherish.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, and it's actually gotten into clearer relief in the last probably 5 years as I sort of realized like how just really what a gift my friend group was in high school, and you know, doing show choir and band and you know, theater and all of those things, how much I cherish those memories, where in the time I was like, I hate everything, get me out of my life. But now looking back, there's some things. But I want to tell you this story to tell you why we're picking this topic this week. So driving by a group of youths is a topic near and dear to my heart. It is a thing I think about all the time, and it started way back in high school. So I only got invited to like two high school parties my entire high school career, I guess, as it were. And one of them was like the last one, like the last party, like the graduation party or whatever. But there was a party earlier in high school, might have even been in middle school. It was either in like late middle school, or early high school. And I found myself at a party with all the popular kids. And I so desperately wanted to be popular and wanted to be one of them, and felt no entry into that, like no purchase on how to make my way into that crowd.
Yes.
That I just like glommed on to any little thing I could think of. And they were playing at this party Cypress Hill's Black Sunday. Which is one of the best albums ever made. It's just such a great front to back album. You know, I love this album for what it is on its own. But at the time, I got it in my head that if I listened to Cypress Hill's Black Sunday, then I too would be cool. It was so clear to me that that was the path. Like, because that was the thing I had, right? I had music. Like, music was so baked into my identity. I thought, well, if I like Cypress Hill and they like Cypress Hill, then we'll like Cypress Hill together. And so I was too young to buy Cypress Hill's Black Sunday. And my parents certainly weren't going to buy me a stoner rap album with an explicit tag on it. And so I had to come up with a lot of different kind of like this heist. I wasn't stealing anything, but there's a sort of heist plan. So my plan basically was my mom was going to take me to the mall at some point over the weekend. And she was going to go down to Melissa's, where she was going to buy things or look at things, I guess. And I was of an age where I didn't have to go with her. I could just go to the other places, you know, the arcade or whatever other place cool people hang out in. And of course, I found my way over to the local, you know, music store that I've mentioned many times. And they had Cypress Hill's Black Sunday, because why wouldn't they? Because it's an amazing record that was selling tons of copies. And I just wondered, hey, this is a high school kid who's working here. I don't think they're going to care about this explicit tag. I think they're going to sell it to me, even though I'm not old enough to buy this album. So I got my money and, you know, like all my little quarters and dollars that I could scrounge up. And I sheepishly grabbed Black Sunday and I like kind of tiptoed up to the counter, hoping they weren't going to like ask for ID yes. or something. Mm-hmm. And I handed them Black Sunday and they actually took my money and took it out of the little plastic, you know, anti-theft device and handed me Black Sunday. And now I had this greater dilemma of how am I going to get this home without my mom seeing it? Like what, what is the escape plan here? So I had to like shove it in my pants. Like,
yes,
because I, you know, that was the only thing I could think to do. I kind of tucked my shirt in and
it seemed like you hadn't thought it that far.
I
you didn't expect
because I didn't
to get
expect
out of the
them
store.
To. I didn't expect them to sell it to me. So now I'm walking around the mall with Cypress Hill's Black Sunday stuff somewhere in my clothes, hoping that my mom doesn't notice it. I think she probably noticed it, but I don't know if she noticed it. She certainly didn't say anything. And I kind of like gingerly walked through the mall back to Melissa's, and then I sat very still, waiting for her, like dutifully waiting for her to finish her thing so they could get to the car and get home. And as I was like having to get in the car, I realized like this is in an inopportune place. And if I sit down, how is it going to work? Like it's.
Yeah. It's, you don't want to break the merchandise.
Right. And so I had to like kind of like rearrange somehow. Like I had to like pick my exact moment and I've somehow made it into the car. I kind of moved it into my shirt. And I kind of like sat with my like hands around myself yes. On the way home so that not to draw attention to the thing that like the clear rectangular, or, you know, square piece of plastic, and like oversized piece of plastic in my clothes.
I just love your paranoia here. Like, would your mom have even been paying attention to what you were buying?
I think probably not.
Screen your like music?
Well, I wasn't allowed to buy things with explicit tags on them. And there wasn't a no rap policy in our house, but there wasn't not a no rap policy, you know, like.
Uh-huh. There was a no explicit music policy.
And it was sort of the policy was basically, well, we know you would never listen to this, so therefore we don't have to have a policy about it. And so, because I was a good kid who didn't
make naive rules. Mom. It was very naive.
And so I eventually did make it home with Cypress Hill's Black Sunday. And then I would like hide it like under my bed so yes. that they wouldn't find it, as if they were going through all my CDs
yes,
or something like that.
Exactly.
And I would listen to it. And then I was at this next level of my heist, which was how do I help everybody know that I now own Cypress Hill's Black Sunday and that we yes. can all be friends because we're all
yeah,
popular
exactly.
together.
Now you're on the cool crowd.
I never did crack that one. I never yeah. cracked how do I ever, how am I ever going to do it? Because I didn't have a car, so I couldn't drive by them with the windows down, blasting Insane in the Membrane.
Oh, man. Oh, such a fun song.
So this album has existed for me for like 20 plus years in this place of, you know, it's great on its own. I love everything on it on its own. The production is amazing. The beats are amazing. Their voices are amazing. And also it has this shared thing of this feels so like such a singular part of my origin story. Like
I love
my childhood
that
experience.
You went so deep on an album that you're not even choosing today.
Nah, absolutely. Yeah. But this is like the beginning.
Okay. Yeah, exactly. I've got three reactions to that. One is, I love, as the parent of a teenager now, how much you think that you're getting away with that your parents know
right.
about and don't call out. You know our kids doing this, right? And the other parents like, yeah, you just don't say anything. Just let them get away with it. So our parents totally knew all the things that we were trying to pull with that.
Probably, yeah.
Second is, I love that you had the same experience that I had, except with rated R movies, where I was like, my friend and I would go into the like video rental store and we were like, maybe we can get away with this movie, and this guy seems cool, and we would try to rent it. And matter of fact, no one cared what we were renting at all. There was like basically no policy for anything like that. But we thought, you know, renting a rated R movie was like the coolest, most rebellious thing we could possibly do. Back when you had to go get actual movies from actual video stores, right. and that was the only right. way to watch them. And then three, it's unfortunate that you got to have that same, if I listen to this, I'm cool experience with Cypress Hill when I had it years earlier with All for One and She's Got Skills. that was my experience of, oh, everyone's listening to this, and if I listen to it, I'll be cool. My, like, sixth grade class, when this was, like, super, super popular, Cypress Hill, much better choice. Much more enduring choice.
Yeah, that's fair. Did you find a way to let them know you were listening to All for One?
Probably not. I probably had the same dilemma as you, other than maybe like occasionally it coming on the radio, like in my school, and us all like singing it together because we all knew the lyrics. That happened like one time, you know, like we really didn't think that through, that plan to be cool.
So we're going to open up the therapist chair here in a second, because I have a question for you. And that's basically, I've had this behavior now for my whole life. Like if I'm driving by a group of young people, I very badly want to be noticed by them and have them know that I'm cool. I don't want to be friends with them. I don't want them to like, I don't want to interact with them. I don't want to like, you know, become a part of their life in some way. I just want them to know that guy in the red minivan is cool. So I will like sometimes turn a song on just for driving by them and then switch it to something else afterwards.
Oh my God.
It is the most insane thing that I do. Like, it is such weird behavior. And I cannot for the life of me figure out why I do this. I sort of understand why I did it when I was, you know, 16. I do not understand what I'm trying to get out of it.
How do you? We should have some definition work. How do you define youth? Like, what age are you thinking about when you're like, I drive by a group of young people?
Well, okay. So I'm just revealing all my secrets, right? Like, this is the, like, Quentin Tarantino talks about, he talks about, like, there should always be enough of you in the thing that you're putting out that you're slightly embarrassed by it. And today we're just putting enough of me into this. So this happened a lot at the church, right? So, like, I would be leaving work and the youth group would be there, like the middle schoolers or the high schoolers. I felt more drawn to making sure the high schoolers knew I was cool than the middle schoolers, but both of them I would take. I just thought they might have different ideas about music, and I wasn't very interested in trying to explore what a middle schooler is into. But a high schooler, I did want to find out so that I could play the right music as I was pulling out of the church, so that I could change it when I got to the end of the street.
Yes.
And put something else on.
Yes, I love this. I love that, like, that the high school youth group is like, why is Dave listening to Cypress Hill? Like, what is...
Right. Then, you know, it happens at, like, gas stations. It happens in a lot of places. Like, you know, little groups of high schoolers gathered.
You know, youths are everywhere. It's really a problem.
It's a pandemic. It's really a
problem.
I find myself wanting to make sure that these high schoolers, for one brief moment in time, know that guy. I think probably what I'm doing is just trying to, like, validate my experience in high school of feeling rejected by the popular kids.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, I feel that. Except I've gone the opposite route, which is, like, I get terrified of anyone under the age of like 25 hearing what I'm listening to and like roll my windows up and turn the volume down. And I'm like, the way that I get that validation that you were just talking about is that I told you my wife's a teacher. She and I make playlists for her that she will play in her classroom. And whenever a kid will comment to her about how good the music is, she will then tell me and I will be like, hell yeah. You know, like that's when I'll get my validation. I'm like, yes, the youths enjoy.
Do you actually get verbal feedback though? Like I get nothing. I'm driving away from the group that I want to make sure knows who I am.
Yeah, and in reality, they have no idea that you were even there. Like right. It's not a negative. It's not a positive. It's a not even registering the red minivan as it continues to drive away.
I do imagine that I'm playing it loud enough that they heard it, but I don't know that I'm. I don't know that the clarity of the speakers in my Toyota Sienna.
Okay.
Is allowing them to like enjoy the music.
So last week we were spending our annual trip up in the North Woods of Wisconsin where my father-in-law lives. And we'd go to this soft serve place every day while we're there because it's a tradition. We only get to do it once a year. So every time we're up there, we got to go like as often as we can to this amazing soft serve place. And it is like the place in this tiny Wisconsin town to go. So every night it's like, completely crowded, often with youths who are in the local camps, right? Because there's a lot of sleepaway camps there. And for some reason, on one of the first days of this of this trip that we were up, we happened to be listening to Mariah Carey's Fantasy
while
we were driving. And I definitely lowered our windows and blasted it mainly to embarrass my family, but then it kind of became a tradition, and every time I would be like, should we listen to Fantasy? Like, should we got to be the car that, like, blasts Fantasy when we drive by? And I felt okay with that.
As we previously noted, you can't not hear Fantasy and not be impressed.
Exactly. Like, everyone is going to go, yes, that song is amazing. That's what I said.
And therefore, you are amazing, Caleb.
Exactly.
That's the connection I'm aiming for here.
Exactly. Podcast over.
The best album for driving by a group of youths. What I'm trying to get at is, what is the album you reach for when you want to impress the cool kids?
Yeah.
And what's crazy to me is that high schoolers are not cool. I have the most insane behavior.
So
why
not.
Am I trying to impress high schoolers? It's so
There's
weird.
Some like emotional stunted development thing happening with almost everyone at teenage years, right? Where it's just like we all get really messed up around that time of life, and then some part of us is always, always there.
Right. Lord save me. This is this is weird behavior. Hopefully I've now like jettisoned all of these demons from my body. Like, by talking about it openly, I can stop this insane behavior and just listen to the music I like to listen to.
Yeah.
Although, to be fair, the music I'm picking today is, you know, the definition of the coolest music ever made. So
well, there you go.
You know, I'm still going to listen to it. All right. So I guess without further ado, I want to jump into our picks. But do you have anything else to say about, you have a very different experience of driving by a group of youths, but do you have this experience of wanting cool people to know that you're cool?
I do, but I don't think in the car. I think in the car, I'm mostly just like, we talked about this in our road trip experience, where the car is such a private place. Like, I want it to just be something that I'm experiencing by myself. And so pretty much anytime anyone can hear what I'm listening to, and it almost doesn't matter what it is,
yeah,
I feel weird about it and like roll up the windows and want to like go hide back to my like private experience.
Do you, when you're playing music outside, like on your deck, do you want your neighbors to be kind of impressed?
Sometimes, although I am worried about like being that neighbor that just like annoys everyone by playing their own music, you know, and they can hear. So I think I'm respectful about how close we live to all our neighbors too. But
true.
I definitely am conscious.
No,
yes, exactly. I'm definitely conscious of what I'm playing when I'm outdoors, because I know people can hear for sure.
Nice. Fair enough. So I guess we're going to dive in. Do you want to go first? Or do you want me to go first?
You go first.
So, you know, for my pick, I wanted to pick something that was like timelessly cool, right? Like I have this idea in my head that, you know, the thing that will, that I can play, I don't know that I'm going to aim for something that is modern. You know, if I'm going to play Drake, people are going to know that I'm just posing.
Yep.
If I'm going to play,
exactly,
you know, something that, you know, is, you know, Olivia Rodrigo or something like that, which I genuinely love. I love her music. You know, Phoebe Bridgers, whoever, like, I'm clearly not the target audience for that music. And me listening to it in my minivan is going to be obviously silly. Like, I'm obviously trying way too hard. So I have to go for something that is timelessly cool. And the most timelessly cool music to my mind is anything produced by Timbaland.
Turn the music up in the headphones.
And so Timbaland, you know, was this like amazing 90s, 2000s producer. He produced stuff for Aaliyah, like Aaliyah's Try Again, which I think he co-produced with Missy Elliott. Genuine, you know, Pony, of course. Jay-Z's like Been Pimpin', Dirt Off Your Shoulder. Justin Timberlake's Cry Me a River. Ludacris's Rollout. Like, my soundtrack to college for me is littered with 100%. Timbaland productions. And Timbaland's like his kind of big, heavy beats and kind of like thumb on the synthesizer. Like, he's really in your face. Like, these do not melt into the background. Like, you build your songs around Timbaland's beats because they are so timelessly cool. And of course, he was never better than when he was with his producing partner, Miss Elliott.
Me, I'm super fly, super duper fly, super duper fly.
Me, I'm super fly. And they produced like banger after banger for other artists, and then he produced all of his, all of her best stuff. You know, Get Your Freak On, For My People, and of course, my pick today, 2002's Under Construction album. I honestly don't think that there is a cooler song than Gossip Boy.
When I walk up in the piece, I ain't got any speed. I'm a bad man, my jammer got taken, y'all people ain't got it like me.
this is like the video where they're in the high school and everybody's like talking about, you know, talking about her behind her back, and they're dancing in the halls, and then they go into the classroom and they're dancing, and then Ludacris comes in. Do you remember any of this?
I don't know why this didn't make a big impression on me. I mean, I remember the album, of course.
Yeah.
And you were totally right that Missy Elliott and Timbaland just like dominated late 90s, early 2000s in pop culture and in my memory, of course. But yeah. Gossip Folks, the video, don't remember it.
It's okay if you don't know the video, but the song, which is my favorite song on that album and my favorite song of hers, and truly, I truly think it might be one of the coolest songs ever made. These are just like, every track on Under Construction is built on these classic hip hop samples. They're aiming for something, it seems like, a little more classic than they were doing on the previous album, which I Get Your Freak On and For My People, which is maybe a little more alien, like a little more out there and bizarre. They kind of brought this one back into the kind of this classic hip hop, and they're pulling from really recent, you know, at the time, really recent albums. So they have like a cover of a Method Man song that I think was made like, you know, 5 years earlier, 6 years, seven, maybe 8 years earlier. You know, they have samples from Paul Revere by the Beastie Boys. They have samples from Run DMC. There's just a lot of classic hip hop that this album is built on top of. And there's all these amazing guests. There's Ludacris and Jay-Z,
yeah,
and Beyonce,
TLC,
and
50 Cent. I mean,
just amazing guests. Anyway, so this album to me is just so cool. I actually don't know how to talk about it other than just keep saying over and over again, like, she's the coolest person. This is the coolest album. I'm just going to stop and play another clip from this album real quick.
It's very necessary. On the contrary, no, you do not scare me as you drinking Bloody Mary.
And of course, this has like Work It. You know, like Work It was, yeah, the big song with like the reversed lyric.
Work It's the probably maybe the most recognizable one from this.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, you know, I sometimes don't blast Work It because it's a naughty song.
Yeah, I was going to say, that might not be the one you want your youth group listening to.
That's right. But, you know, certainly Bring the Pain, Funky Fresh Dressed. There's just such good stuff on here. There are some cool lines like on Gossip Folk, like Step to Me, Get Burnt Like Toast. I love Missy Elliott. She's so cool. I actually don't know what else to say about her. I feel like I'm coming into this with this sense of, if I play Missy Elliott while I'm driving by anybody, they will immediately think that I'm cool because Missy Elliott's cool and I'm playing Missy Elliott.
Whatever happened to Missy Elliott? I just feel like after this album, maybe I am mistaken and there's another album with another bunch of hits, but I definitely feel like I just didn't hear anything about her. Like,
yeah, there was one more album after this that was mildly popular, had like Double Dutch on it, and Double Dutch Bus, I can't remember. Anyway, yeah, it had one or two hit songs on it, but they didn't reach the same heights of, you know, of Work It or Get Your Freak On or The Rain, you know, all of her like classic stuff.
Yeah.
And then she kind of disappeared like everybody does. You know, everybody, it seems like you get to a point. It seems like it happens more in rap than in other genres. I don't know if that's actually true. Maybe that's just, you know, I'm looking for it more, but it seems like you kind of fade out. Like you know, you have Jay-Z who's built a whole career and it's kind of popped up over and over again. But, you know, for every Jay-Z, you have, you know, Ludacris and 50 Cent and, you know, DMX or whoever. You know, like there's so many artists who were so huge and then they don't continue making albums. And I don't know if that's, they made enough money and they don't need to do it anymore.
Or they got burned out or.
Yeah, they get burned out. I'm not really sure. Or maybe they just fall out of style, fall out of fashion. I mean, rap seems like it's constantly producing new artists who are developing the form. I think something that's different about rap than rock is that, you know, I don't believe that rock is dead. Like, I don't believe that everything has been done in rock that's ever going to be done. But I believe that on some level. Like, I believe on some level that anything new happening in rock is either happening because they're, you know, bashing it together with other genres, or it's happening because they are, you know, innovating on top of something that's already been innovated all the way through. And so with rap, there's still some newness of the form that's coming out. You know, every few years, it feels like we move into a new phase of what's popular and what's hitting for the youths in America.
For the youths did it to her.
That's right. What happened. Darn youths. And she came out with a couple. She came out with a single or maybe a whole album a couple years ago.
Yeah, I was just actually looking back at it. She seems like she has dropped like a couple singles and some EPs in the last few years, but it doesn't look like any full albums unless I'm missing something.
Yeah, it's I feel like, and I listened to those with some excitement, and they were fine. Like, they didn't feel like they had that same classic,
right,
Missy Elliott, like, you are conquering the world.
Yeah, that is interesting. Think about, like, did we move on?
You know? It's interesting. You know, I think about like Outkast. Like, Outkast to me, in my mind, lives in this place of Andre 3000 and Big Boi, you know, stopped wanting to create together. And that sort of led to this weird separate, that album, you know, Speaker Box of Love Below, you know, where this kind of, they're making their own solo albums. And mm-hmm. I'm assuming helping each other produce a little bit, but I don't actually know. You know, and then they kind of just, in my mind, faded to obscurity. But the truth is they had another album or two after that, and they just weren't very good.
They also just, like, went into helping a ton of other artists and, like, supporting and doing, like, side tracks, but also just, like, producing other people and, like, yeah.
Well, and that's something true, you know, that I know is true about the industry, is that you can make a ton of money guesting on somebody else's song. Like, the amount of money it costs to have Jay-Z on your song. People say it's worth it because if Jay-Z's on your song, you will immediately
get played,
right? Yep. Like, people will actually play your song and you'll sell enough copies to make it worth it. Then hopefully people will like your song too, and what you're doing. So you can certainly make a ton of money just coming in for, you know, 40 minutes worth of work. And maybe that's all it is. You know, maybe you just move on. But even like Timbaland, I feel like his beats are no longer out there. I don't know if he's making music anymore. I have no idea. It's hard to believe that somebody like him would just stop.
He was just so dominant for like almost a decade, I feel like.
Yeah.
And I agree. Like, his stuff was just anything that he touched was like golden.
Yeah. It was so recognizable. I feel like a lot of producers now aren't as like it was clear when something was a Timbaland song. Right from the get-go.
Do you think that there's a downside to being that recognizable? Like, at some point people burn out of your style, whereas if you're kind of underground, people aren't like, oh, another Timbaland song, you know, like eventually.
I mean, maybe, but I think about DJ Khaled, right? Like, it's kind of the same thing.
That was what Timbaland did wrong. He didn't yell Timbaland at the beginning of every single song. I told you that my son goes around the house now going, Metro!
Yeah, from Sweaters.
Yes. And my wife keeps going, what is that? What are you talking about? And then we all laugh.
Oh, youths. Youths of today. I want to talk about Gossip Folk for just one more second. So there's a...
I'll allow it.
There's the chorus of this song is all like... I don't know what the right... I don't know if there's a name for this, but you know, it's where you like add the Z's into the middle of the words.
Yes.
To kind of create this
yes.
new thing, you know, Jay-Z.
As we did back in the day. Yes.
Yeah. And so for so long, I felt like I shouldn't sing the lyrics to that part because I didn't know what I was saying. I was worried because, you know, Jay-Z often uses it to like not disguise, but he, you know, he has other words for the N-word that he like, you know, swaps out for something with the Z in the middle of it.
Sure.
And so for a long, long time, I thought that this was, you know, possibly risque or possibly like, uncouth for me, a white guy, to be singing along. And it turns out it's just like this callback to this old school funk song, and this whole time I could have just been singing it all along. So Missy Elliott making it safe for the Dave Sandells of the world to blare it from their Siennas, and we appreciate it. We appreciate it, Missy.
Turns out it was very vanilla. It was vanizzle.
I can't start. I want to, but I'm gonna stop myself. I've already revealed so much.
There are just like some things about like when you go to explain, you're like I can't explain the Izzle craze of the early 2000s to my son. Like I can't even begin to explain that there were people who did that and that was just an acceptable thing that we all thought was fine.
It was fine. It was fun. It was super fun. There's like more ways to create weird rhymes. It was cool. I liked it. So anyway, that's my pick for driving by a group of youths. I think it is factually correct. I think that there are other songs that could be as cool as Gossip Folk, but there are no songs that are cooler than Gossip Folk.
So it might be on the pinnacle, but no one's going above it.
That's right. All right. So Caleb, tell us your album, your pick for best album for driving by a group of
Yes, groups. I will. And I will tell you that this was actually a hard topic for me because of my instinct to roll up the window. So I had to think if I fought that instinct and actually wanted the youths to hear, what would I want them to hear? And here's the thing, Dave, is that there's no version of me trying to find music that they would actually know that would make me come off cool. Like, there's just not. Like, if I listen to things that they would like, they'd be like, oh, that old dude's trying so hard. If I listen to things they don't like, that they recognize, they'd be like, oh, that's lame. So I went with, what music are they just not going to recognize at all that maybe would still sound appealing and interesting? And so I kind of went back in time to some hardcore punk, which you know I love, and picked an album by The Misfits called Static Age.
Now, The Misfits are a band or a t-shirt company?
I think that they purely exist in the imagination of old men wanting to seem cool, which I think is appropriate to this topic. But they do have a very recognizable band logo, which you may have seen, which is kind of like an inverted skull kind of dude looking up. Like, you've seen 1,000 Misfits t-shirts out there. And to Dave's point, very few people have actually listened to The Misfits versus just seen the t-shirts. But I think that they do, you know, for what they did back in the early 80s around when they were making most of their most recognizable music, pretty fun. Not my favorite hardcore punk band, but this album in particular is fun and weird in a way that I kind of want them to just be like, what is that listening to? You know what I mean? Like, it's got that kind of hardcore punk attitude, but it's also got some just like off the wall, like horror-y kind of lyrics, like Teenagers from Mars. Casualty, Return of the Fly. Like, it's got a lot of songs that are just like, just weird and like fun, and again, just leaning. I think there's a reason why the skull is the most recognizable like logo for the Misfits, because they do kind of, they're like horror punk almost, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that tracks. Do you find, I haven't listened to Misfits a lot. They are not a band that I've spent much time with, just full disclosure. Do you find that their music matches their aesthetic?
I think that they attempted to create the same aesthetic in both their, I mean, this is probably true of a lot of those punk bands back in the day where they like wanted to be kind of off the wall, rebellious, you know, everything to me comes back to that, like what the Sex Pistols did in the like late 70s. Like, everyone was trying to do what the Sex Pistols did, which is just like piss everyone off, you know? And I think that Misfits did that, but they added this horror imagery over it that became like very iconic.
So they were, you know, they would come out in their concerts with like their faces painted white, right? Or like,
I mean, they're not Kiss, Dave, but yeah, they would come out dressed in this kind of horror garb quite often. I don't know how much, so I don't know enough about the Misfits to know how much they were leaning into that later in their touring career once that imagery became so iconic. That's the thing.
I think it was always there. My understanding, you know, just from the history of knowing, like, you know, Glenn Danzig and you know, the kind of this scene, I think they always were coming out in this like kind of makeup and you know, had these they were aiming for something that evoked horror, but their music is I wouldn't call it happy, but it's kind of poppy, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like, it's not as like angry as like Minor Threat or some of the other ones. I'd say it is like just playfully horrific, if that's a way to describe playfully music.
Horrific. Walk us through one of their songs.
I think that the couple ones I would call out for this album are probably TV Casualty is one of the ones that really stood out to me. Christmas comes to which I never replied. Such a like moment in time in this like early 80s kind of like TV culture, like MTV is really taking over and it's video killed the radio star, and it's all about like what is TV doing to our youth kind of, and they're leaning into that a little bit in a way that feels very time capsule-y, and that really stood out to me about that song. It's also just kind of a fun like catchy song. Teenagers from Mars is probably another one where it's I think again thinking of the youths and like what are they actually going to hear and think, oh, what is that? It's very like indicative of youth culture in terms of feeling like an outcast, like literally from Mars. Mm-hmm. Like I think it captures that really well. Yeah, those are probably two really good entry points for me. But, you know, it's a very listenable album. Like, there's definitely some things I might skip that I don't like quite as much on this album. But in terms of just, like, having something fun to, like, cruise down the street to, definitely fun.
When you think about the culture that they either were a part of or inspired, you know, I think about like skate punks and stuff like that. Do you wish you could go back and like trade your childhood for that childhood? Like you could be be in DC in the early 80s and like have your skateboard and be a part of this scene?
Yes. I think there is a part of me that wishes that, to the point where when my son was taking skateboarding lessons last year, I was like, I want to go do that.
So I guess the follow-up question is, when you drive by kids who are part of that scene, are you like more interested in them knowing that you're cool too?
Yeah, I think so. Again, not to the point where I'd ever actually talk to them.
Sure. Nobody's talking to these kids.
But I think in terms of like feeling simpatico for a group of youths, I think those are the ones I probably feel the most like, that's my crew, or would have been my crew, you know, like equivalent.
I like leaning into my cousin Vinny-ness of all of this, like the youths of tomorrow.
The youths. I always think of Schmidt from New Girl. He's like, youths.
Oh, sir. It is so amazing how little I want to be in relationship with the youths and how much I want to impress
them. Except then you have children and all of a sudden they become youths and you're like, oh god, well I've just got this person in my house judging me all the time.
So I'm looking forward to like knowing their friends. It's because I love them, it's not because I love the youths.
Yeah, the other thing I would call out about this album that's really interesting is that it was recorded in 1978 but not released until 1997 as a standalone album. So it's a really complicated story. I don't know the entire back end of it, but I know it had something to do with labels and like how this was recorded, like over several sessions, I believe. And so all of it wasn't recorded in 1978. Some of it was added later. But the Misfits have this kind of like long running story of different members, different album or different labels, like, and to where it's crazy to me how much of an enduring imprint they've made on popular culture, almost exclusively out of that iconic imagery, given their kind of haphazard career and very few like knowable songs or albums, and this one having this like very long lifespan of not really being released as a standalone album until 1997 is pretty insane to me, given how much I associate them, at least with that like late 70s, early 80s punk scene.
Right. It's funny. I think of them. I think of Glenn Danzig first. I think of the song Mother. Like that's my whole idea of who he is and what his sound is. And that sounds nothing like the Misfits. So when I went backwards and I eventually tried listening to the Misfits, I didn't spend a ton of time there, but you know, as I listened to them, I thought like, this is not the Danzig that I know. Like it's amazing to me how like how popular they are. And there are no popular songs. Like,
that's
there's
what
no
I'm saying.
Song that is like it's made wild. Into the zeitgeist.
I think it's just like they, again, the iconic imagery, the name just sounds so rebellious. You know, it's literally sure, the absolutely. Misfits. It's like, could you find a better name to encapsulate youth culture? That I think that's part of their like enduring appeal. Those of us who want to believe that we are still youths, you know?
My dream here is that you will be driving by a group of youths and you'll be blasting Static Age and they'll go like, quick, Shazam this, guys. And they'll Shazam it and they'll find out who it is. And then they'll adopt this whole subculture. Their life will be completely turned over to the post-hardcore punk scene from the late 70s and early 80s.
Yes.
Which to me feels like 20 years ago, but it's actually like 40 years ago.
I know. Wild.
And I think that's lovely. I hope that happens, Caleb. I hope you roll your window down and some youths find misfits and find a whole subculture for themselves.
That's right. A subculture that, you know, remains having this youthful energy despite being 40, 50 years old.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Would you put Danzig? Sorry, not Danzig. Would you put this Misfits album or any Misfits albums in your?
I think I would put a Misfit album. Walk Among Us probably it would be in my canon. Mm-hmm. I don't think I would put Static Age in my canon. I think it's just it's fun. It's playful. It's not something that I go back to a lot. So I don't think it's canon.
Is the fun and playfulness the reason why you picked Static Age over Walk Among Us tonight?
I think that I picked Static Age over Walk Among Us because I think Walk Among Us I almost consider more of a like pure punk album. As I understand it, I think that was their like first actual LP, like a first kind of go at making an album. And I think Static Age feels a little bit more. Maybe this is because it was recorded in multiple sessions over so many decades, but it feels a little bit more haphazard. It's more playful in that there are weirder songs. And I think I was going for weird, you know, in terms of getting the youth's attention more than I was going for, like, here's a cool punk album.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
I do think that if we're going to go to honorable mentions, I did think of hip hop when I was thinking about, like, what would I want to seem cool driving by listening to. I think, like we were talking about earlier, I would probably avoid most of the modern stuff and go, like, I really love the album Quality Control by Jurassic 5. Thinking something that, sounds classic but isn't, like, immediately recognizable. Maybe, like, oh, is this a Tribe Called Quest? Oh, no, it's not. You know, like, something like that where it's, like, again, the top compliment has to be getting out the Shazam. What am I going to want to get out the Shazam? Yeah, I think there was Shazam Misfits. Sure. I think they were Shazam, Jurassic 5. What else was I thinking for this week? I mean,
Fugees is another one I thought of tonight. Fugees, I thought so, of doing Fugees.
I loved Fugees. What a tease in terms of like being able to see them again in recent years. That's all I think about. What are some of your honorable mentions?
You know, I was thinking about like NERD or Nerd. I don't know how you pronounce it. Pronounce it Nerd or NERD?
I have no idea. I've always wondered that myself.
Yeah, so like the Pharrell Williams project from, you know, the early 2000s, all the stuff that they did with Keyless. I stopped short of picking that because in the last couple of years, as the story has come out about how poorly they treated Keyless and how much money stole from her, that it's less fun to listen to those songs now. But they still like bang. Those are great songs. I was thinking about, you know, my own version of Misfits, which is Iggy Pop and the Stooges. I was thinking about other hip hop records like Mad Villainy. And then I was thinking about a few rock albums that I think if I drove by a group of young people, they would think like, that's cool music. It's hard to believe they wouldn't think this is cool music. And that's the Breeders, of course, Queens of the Stone Age, because they make these like, you know, these big riffs. And then Blur. Blur? Are you like a big Blur fan?
I know Blur.
I think that any song the Blur has ever made is so cool. Like, it's just such a cool vibe.
It's the British
It's hard to believe
vibe,
they wouldn't be, I guess so, but I'm like more into their like later stuff, where it's like not the Britpop thing. It's a lot more moody. And I think all those songs are so cool. And any group of youths would be happy to hear them as Dave Sandow rolled
by.
Just
to wrap up this segment, Dave, do you not feel any consternation about listening to hip hop in general as a white guy driving by in your minivan, because I feel like one of the reasons why I ended up going to punk as a genre is because I felt just uncomfortable with hip hop blaring from my car pretty much anytime anyone walked by. Like, there's that's probably a mental block. I'm going to just say it. It's probably a mental block, but it's there.
So it's funny. I absolutely feel that way about modern hip hop. Like, I love Kendrick. And I don't often play Kendrick
just modern hip hop
while driving around. Anything that's like 90s, anything that they would play on like the 90s hip hop throwback stations, which Chicago has a great one. Chicago has a great radio station that's just like all 90s throwbacks.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. It's like classic rap, which I didn't know existed as a genre, but
it's been around long enough now. I feel
like, you know, anything that was like Tribe Called Quest and later up until like, you know, maybe like mid 2000s. Or maybe even before that, but you know, like anything that happened in college feels like mine. It feels like I can have claim on it as much as anybody. And maybe I'm wrong. I'm open to being wrong about that. Do you don't feel that though with 90s music, like early like 2000s? Like if I listen to Snoop, you know, it's funny. There's a lot of songs that I don't necessarily blare because of the content.
Yeah, right.
Like, you know, I guess cuss words, but also like, just the N-word flying around. But then I also, you know, there's a lot of songs that are just a little too vulgar.
Yeah, right.
That maybe be blaring on my radio. But some of the stuff that was like unpopular, I kind of missed how vulgar some of it was. The stuff that like really was popular.
Wait, missed it in terms of how vulgar it was, or missed it in terms of like, oh, that stuff?
No. I think that because it was like in the mainstream.
Yeah. You probably mostly heard the like clean versions then.
I guess, but it even the clean versions, like the content is still there. And for some reason it felt less risque than it actually was.
Yeah.
I think because they were playing it everywhere I went. And in college is so weird because you're in this like bubble of kids your age.
I mean, I had the experience recently of going back and listening to Big Pimpin' from Jay-Z, and I was like, oh yeah, this song. Oh my God, what is he saying? Incredibly sexist. So you know, it hits different. I feel an ownership over that like time period, in that like belonged to us as we experienced culture in that time period. But I think because I didn't listen to a lot of full hip-hop albums in that time, I don't feel like an ownership over the like albums, because I didn't buy a lot of like full hip hop albums until probably streaming, when I was like streaming them.
Oh, interesting. See, I was like in Utopia in college, there were a lot of my friends who were really into rap. They actually got me into a lot of these bands or a lot of these artists who I don't know that I was necessarily into coming right out of high school.
Yeah.
You know, there's like Tribe Called Quest stuff that I was into in high school, but that's like,
for sure,
you know, not quite the same. I wasn't into Notorious B.I.G. until my buddies were in college, and then I found it for myself and loved it.
Yeah. I mean, I think I had a bunch of friends that were into Biggie, Tupac, like a bunch of stuff when I was growing up, that I would listen to when I was with them. And of course there was MTV, and some of that stuff was just so prominent in terms of the like major singles. There were a few albums that I got, when I was in college, but I want to say that they weren't like, I don't know, like not a lot of it stuck around that I would consider my canon now, and that I didn't like have to rediscover the entire album later on in life.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess that's true. I think there's not a ton of rap in my personal canon. You know, I wouldn't put Under Construction in my canon. I would certainly put the single Gossip Book in there if I was doing like a singles canon. But I think I agree with you. I don't have a ton of it in there, and I don't know if I'm able to reconcile why that is. There are some, though. There are, you know, a handful of Outkast albums and a handful of Tribe albums and a handful of Jay-Z albums that are in there. And then I think one thing that was true is that there was a lot of music coming out, and a lot of it was built around like a hit single.
Yes.
Rap in general, because the rappers aren't doing the production, I think lends itself more to, you know, having awesome singles, not necessarily awesome albums. There are obviously exceptions, like all the Wu-Tang stuff, the, you know, Raekwon and Ghostface Killah, like all the soul albums that came out of Wu-Tang, they like seem to put together full albums. Nas puts together full albums that seem really thoughtful and are kind of front to back really playable. Right. But, you know, I find that even like DMX, if I put on DMX, I don't stick with it for the whole album. I kind of stick with the singles and maybe a couple album tracks. But for the most part, I think rap doesn't always lend itself to at least rap from that time period.
Yeah.
It felt like getting the singles out were probably the most important thing.
Yeah.
And then you kind of built an album around that.
Yeah, I think that's,
you know, I think about Nelly. Like Nelly was huge in that same era. And I couldn't tell you a single Nelly song that wasn't one of his singles.
Yeah.
And I own those albums. I just, you know, I own them for those songs. And that was it.
Yep. 100%. That's how you did it.
Any more you want to throw out there before we talk about what we're listening to?
It's going to become a running joke that Run the Jewels is like the runner up for every single category for me. But I genuinely love listening to Run the Jewels in the car, and that's one thing that I would probably listen to very loudly and may or may not get the youth's attention.
But you couldn't play it with the windows down. That's
what I'm saying. That's one of those things where I'd be like, yeah, oh, turn it down, roll up the windows. What am I listening to? I'm fine.
In terms of what we're listening to this week, I've been really into this album called Make the Ting by Elijah and Jams.
Close the app, make the ting. Close the app, make the ting. Close the app, make the ting. Cause scrolling your life away ain't the ting. I just done my doom scroll formula. I didn't think I was gonna see something, man. If you do yours, bet you.
So this is a like dub electronic duo, or I don't know if they're a duo. It's a producer and then a vocalist. I think they've been making music separately more than together. But they have this new album called Make the Ting, and it is the most positive exploration of what it takes to succeed in the music industry that I think I've ever heard.
Interesting.
It's actually a really cool record because it's just like full of these positive vibes. The lyrics are appropriate for kids. I've been listening to it with my kids a ton, but it's a really, really good record. It's not made for kids. It's certainly not made, you know, for that setting. I just am so excited that there's a rap album that I can share with them. That's really cool.
It's rap.
So, you know, he's got a British accent, and which is, you know, my kryptonite. Like I just love, or my catnip. I just love rappers with British accents. And then, you know, it's kind of all like dubby music, you know, and big beats and everything else. And the music is just, it's so essentially what it's based on is this, this producer named Elijah, has been, making the series of posts on social media where he posts like yellow post-it notes on his Instagram. And each one of them has a lesson he's learned about how to succeed in the music industry and still be like a human and like still be a good person. And so they built an album kind of, or let's say built a song around all of those yellow squares, like those yellow squares that he's posting. And then the whole record kind of walks you through like, you know, the kind of hard work it takes. There's a song that he does towards the end where he is sort of personifying a GPS system and talking about like the destination is success. And here's all the different, you might have to take a left at a certain point, you know, like the directions are going to come in clear. He kind of like works the metaphor like a punching bag and, you know, just rings out every usable line out of it. And I think this could have gone sideways. I think that this record could have been like weird and dumb, but they're such talented artists that it ends up sounding really cool. That's awesome. I highly recommend it. So Make the Ting by Elijah and James.
Oh yeah, I'm definitely going to check that out. It sounds super, like a super interesting project. I have been listening to De La Soul this week.
Hello, it's the Soul, trooping in with the Jungle Patrol. And this one's about the KOs, the knockouts out there who's holding my bloody
up. Wait a minute.
Which I have found to be a very good work music for me. I feel like almost in the same way that Mushroom Jazz was great, like just groovy background music for you while you're working. And I found that just like putting on a De La Soul on shuffle has just been great work music. And I didn't spend a lot of time with De La Soul when they were popular. I mean, one, I was a child, but like even as I started like getting into hip hop, you know, and like starting to appreciate, especially in the 90s hip hop, starting to go back to things like Tribe Called Quest, never really spent a lot of time with De La Soul for some reason. and them coming back onto streaming just a few weeks ago, which is wild, gave me this new opportunity to like go back into their catalog and kind of shuffle a ton of stuff from them. And I've been doing that because I'd have no relationship with any of these albums or really a lot of these songs. So it's just been complete discovery for me, which is super fun.
You should take a day and not shuffle them because they're actually sequenced really thoughtfully. Yeah. And some of the albums tell like complete stories.
Which one should I go back to and listen top to bottom?
Yeah, I mean, certainly, you know, the big ones like 3 Feet High and Rising, De La Soul's Dead, those are perfect albums that are thoughtfully sequenced. They also are loaded with skits.
Oh, yeah.
So that can be a little disruptive to a workflow.
Yeah, that might be a little bit harder to work during.
Yeah, for sure. But they just have a bunch of records that are Stakes as High.
Yeah.
Is another one I would probably recommend listening to, you know, front to back. Maybe just those three. I don't know that I haven't listened to the other ones as much. But just take a day sometime and listen to them for
yeah,
because they're worthy of it.
Yeah, I would might do that. But
De La Soul was one of those bands that I also came to later. Like I didn't spend a lot of time with them in the 90s, but in college I found them
fun
and really enjoyed them and didn't really understand why it took me so
long. Yeah, yeah. See, that was me more of like a Jurassic 5 and A Tribe Called Quest. Similarly, when I was in college.
Yeah. And Tribal Quest, we got to get around to talking about them someday. I actually thought about Midnight Marauders for my
pick. Oh, nice.
I have a whole thing I want to talk through about, like Low End Theory is, I think, their best album, but Midnight Marauders is the one I listen to the most. But whether that means, is Midnight Marauders actually better? That's a conversation I'd like to have. Like, is the one you listen to more, does that make it better? You know, it's just like the Kendrick argument of, like, I listen to, you know, A Good Kid, Mad City, and I listen to Damn way more than I listen to Pimp a Butterfly.
Yeah.
But sort of like the sort of agreed upon answer for what is his best album is to Pimp a Butterfly. And I always just assumed that had to be true, but now it's pretty clear to me it's Good Kid, Mad City. And I think I might actually have Damn ahead of it too.
Oh, I was going to say, I was going to put Damn ahead of it. That's funny.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Whole other podcast. Yeah. We just came up with like three other podcast topics while going through what we were listening to this week.
Hey man, classic. That's how it happens.
It's classics.
All right, buddy. Thanks everyone for listening. You know, if you are enjoying it, we would love for you to share it on your socials, you know, leave us a positive review in Apple Podcasts, especially if you are willing to. That helps us be discovered by other people. So we really, really appreciate it. And of course, send us your picks for the best album for driving by a group of youths.
Yeah. Tell us what youths means to you.
Yeah. Tell us, are we insane? No, tell me, am I insane? I feel like I've really worked through something tonight, Caleb. This has been a very healthy.
Yeah.
Incredibly embarrassing.
Yeah.
Hour.
I've really seen you transform before my eyes. So, like being on this journey with you.
Yeah. And I'm going to publish it so that the world can hear it.